Hello everyone and welcome back to the Computer Vision in Production podcast show. The podcast show where we talk all about everything computer vision, from the individual components of the technology including vision, cameras and deep learning, right through to hearing about some of the most interesting applications that companies are using at the moment. Hello everyone and welcome to the Computer Vision in Production podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly. Today's guest is Philip Mueller, who's a co-founder and CEO at Signatrix, Berlin-based AI and computer vision startup. Philip, welcome to the show.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Good. Great to have you here. A lot of people may know this, as we've actually previously had Christoph on the show early last year. So we've got a, continuous listeners involved, you might know a couple of things about Signatrix. But I suppose from a CEO perspective of the business, why don't you give us an introduction to Signatrix, Philip?
No, absolutely. So Signatrix is basically about remaking retail in the sense that we're trying to help retailers uncover basically data that is sitting around and doing nothing for them, specifically video data. And this basically helps them gain transparency in the store setting that they could otherwise not get comparably with what an e-commerce retailer may have. And so they have these cameras and they're throwing away most of the data that's produced by these cameras. We're basically helping them use that data productively, primarily to mitigate loss, improve processes, and a lot more in the future. We work with some of the large retail brands in the world, and our systems are live in big parts of Europe and the United States.
So can you kind of just give us a bit more of an example of that? I suppose that data that's not being used, and for people who aren't in the groceries domain, you know, they'd also be interested in knowing how you're making not used data usable.
So basically, we like there's a reason that when you go into any retail store or any grocery retail store, you will likely find cameras there. Most of the data will just sort of be shown at some screen in the back, and maybe there's a person there looking at it, and maybe there's not. But in any case, sort of 3 days later, it will likely be deleted unless somebody sees something that they sort of deem worth keeping. So we asked ourselves that same question when we started. So what to do with it actually, and sort of put our focus on loss prevention and sort of shrink in retail stores to basically try and prove that state-of-the-art deep learning systems can provide the accuracy and sort of real-time requirements that would be used to bring benefit to these stores. And so the first products that we've done, they basically look at sort of the front of the store, if you will. So basically everything that maybe an entrance or sort of a checkout with a person sitting there or a self-checkout counter or sort of multiple self-checkout counters that is supervised by sort of one single person. And the idea is to build assistive systems for these people in the store, right? So next to interacting with customers, they usually have sort of the job to make sure that sort of transactions are correct, right? And they often have a hard time meeting that requirement because everything's very fast. They have a ton of jobs to do all at the same time, and a lot of these sort of checking that everything's all right is sort of boring and tedious and the same thing all over again, it seems. And if you imagine a self checkout with sort of six self checkout counters and sort of one person, that's there's the job it is to sort of maintain the integrity of all these transactions. They'll lose stuff, right? They'll lose focus, and it's just sort of hard to all keep that together. And so the idea is sort of check these transactions automatically, notify these persons when something seems suspicious, something's off. Maybe even a customer needs help, right? Because they have difficulty maintaining sort of interacting with the counter, and then that person sort of can be with the right customer at the right time, and so provide sort of maximum output, if you will. So that's mostly the use cases that we offer right now.
I remember actually a story And I actually think it ended up, and sorry, I'm going off topic here, but it ended up on like Dumbest Criminals. I can't remember where it was. A guy went to a self-checkout, checked a PlayStation 4 in as a bag of apples, the way you could automatically check, got away with it, got arrested the next day for trying to do the same thing in the same store.
Yeah, people get bold, I guess.
I know, right? And I know that's obviously an extreme case, but you know, there's obviously a lot of ones where people could be, you know, shaving 20 euros off a shop twice a week. And if there's, you know, 1,000 people doing that, the loss is insane.
Yeah, it hurts your margins, right? I mean, often, especially in grocery, people operate at sort of 1-3% sort of EBIT margin, and so this kind of stuff hurts, right? And it's also right. It's as you said, right? If you shave 10% off every purchase or every second purchase, that's kind of where they start making money. To continue on your anecdote, right? There's a British retailer we know of. They sell, I think, 30-40% more potatoes than they buy. Right? Oh. Because people will just be like, okay, I don't know, I have champagne, I'll put it on the scale and weigh it. And, you know, per kilo, I guess potatoes are a lot cheaper than champagne. And so people do all kinds of weird stuff. And it's sort of hard to sort of check the integrity of every transaction purely with labor.
Yeah. And I think that's, am I right? Was your first product, sorry, my Irish accent kicking in there. Your first product, was it focused around people pushing carts out of the entrance, full carts?
Yeah, that's also something that we've done, right? Open entrance, no gates. People, you know, try and provide a sort of inviting customer experience. But other people will obviously abuse that, right? It's at the entrance, at the self-checkout where, you know, especially if you look for more sort of for people who know what they're doing, who might do this for a living, you know, shopping carts are sort of a much more effective tool than a bag if you want to carry out lots of merchandise. So that's the thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, even speaking about this, I'm like, wow, these people are very brave.
Yeah, no, it's astonishing. Like, yeah, I had that impression as well when I didn't know about the stuff when we started on. It's like, seriously, people are doing that? So, yeah.
I've learned so much about the grocery store and grocery domain, not even just retail, but specific grocery stores from you guys. You know, even people going up to, you have another product, right, which is at the tills, make sure that everyone has taken all the items out of their basket and not left the expensive ones in the bottom.
Yeah, absolutely. It even happened to me sort of by accident. That's what I'm going to say now for sure. Yeah, it's just, you know, there are retailers, they force their stuff to stand up, right? Maybe somebody even sort of have a number at the bottom of the shopping cart. You have to type that in to complete the transaction, right? Because otherwise nobody will do it. It's like, I don't care. It's like, it's not my goods. Like, I'm not trying to sort of, it's not meant in a disrespectful way, but I mean, imagine you have to sort of get up, I don't know, every minute. It's tedious, right? So retailers estimate that this sort of, they call it bottom of basket kind of problem, is responsible for 10, 20, 25% of overall sort of theft. So it's impressive. Yeah.
Wow. Going beyond the kid in the pram, taking the occasional chocolate bar. again, it's related to your domain, groceries, and I actually seen this one in retail also. Maybe it's just I've been taking extra focus of these things since speaking with you guys for the first time about 2-3 years ago. When I was shopping in Ireland, when COVID came in, social distancing, our local Aldi, or could have been Lidl, I'm not sure which one it was, they had red light, green light, instead of having a security guard telling people to come in. And it was doing a person counting because they could only have a max amount of people in the store per square meters. So when people were coming out, green light to go in, red light to say we're full. But it was the first time that I've actually seen something like that. I know it's very basic, you know, just counting in and out. But it was the first time I've seen something like that actually in play in real life around me. And then again, that's the data I see. You're working on the data you don't see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for this whole sort of people counting, conversion tracking thing has sort of been more prominent in sort of malls, right, or sort of other branches of retail, because, I mean, it's a good tool to measure conversion, right? You see how many people go into the store or go by the store, and then you look at total sales, right? You can get an idea of how many people you get to buy stuff. I think so grocery didn't invest in this so heavily prior to COVID, because usually if you go into a Lidl, you'll buy something, right? So they'll have high conversion, and so didn't make sense to measure this as much. But I agree with you, right? And they've been in Germany, and they've been everywhere as well, right? It's just a cool tool to just keep check of how many people are in the store if you have certain regulation. A funny thing, though, that we've seen, and this is sort of why we also sort of didn't jump on it. I mean, it's a cool use case, but sort of you will mostly see this being accompanied by a person sitting there as well, right? Just to make sure that people will actually not disregard the red sign. So you're not really getting a lot of labor savings, and then you could make the point that, you know, this person may be able to do plus minus one. But I'm with you, right? I mean, even though I also appreciated seeing that. Every piece of technology in the store is one I like.
I could imagine, you know, at the beginning of COVID, the red line being up there, but this store being the only one in Berlin that has toilet paper, nobody's obeying the red sign.
It was an issue, wasn't it?
it was a worldwide epidemic. it was crazy. It never happened in Ireland, but I used to love you. You'd see it on Facebook and Instagram, people going crazy for it. So what I'd like to know is, you know, so you came up with these products working with the data you can see. Look, coming up with any sort of use case that you can look to bring business value to one of your customers, it can be very difficult. How did you get an idea of what value you could get of the data you can see? And what I mean by that, like, did you, or how close have you been with potential customers, or did you turn around to one guy at the start and say, do you know what, if you give us your surveillance camera video, we'll save you money?
So we tried a bunch of stuff. So the latter approach, unfortunately, didn't work. So we had to be a little more specific than that. I think you need to sort of try and sort of be empathic with the customer, right? And sort of also try and understand how the organizations work. So the first department that we focus on were the LP people, or the loss prevention people, and sort of just tried and understand sort of what their biggest pain points were, and then tried sort of building around that. And that, you know, worked quite well. Didn't work perfectly though. And that sort of, I don't know, maybe brings me to sort of one learning, as sort of there's sort of an ever increasing number. I've seen it recently. I've been to the NRF big show in New York last week, and sort of an ever increasing number of sort of startups that appear to be doing sort of visual AI, deep learning with video data and everything like that, because I think more and more people are realizing that this is actually a sort of underdeveloped area maybe in retail stores, which I appreciate, right? Gives credit to the idea and sort of underlines that trend. But I think next to sort of proving out that something is a worthwhile use case, that's sort of there's actually sort of a problem somewhere, and there are sort of many tiny, let's say, problems or sort of marginal problems, that sort of marginal problem for a retailer with thousands of stores is sort of in sum a substantial saving if you think about it, could be sort of tens of millions. But at the same time, since sort of retailers usually don't have tons of compute infrastructure, right? They're not sort of the super early adopters of every technology wave, if you will. They actually do have a hard time scaling this stuff, because sort of marginal solutions, usually you tend to sort of deploy them on sort of small scale hardware and everything like that. And every solution will sort of maybe have their own deployment target. So you kind of scatter the store with IoT devices, and everyone sort of builds an IoT fleet of stuff. And this is something that retailers, I think, find very hard to manage. And this is also why things sort of have a hard time sort of getting a lot of traction, and why at the same time you have sort of two things that seem contrary, right? So you see a lot of companies and sort of smart people, they say, look, we have sort of this great solution, great technology for retailers. And at the same time, if you go into retail stores, you see very little technology, as you pointed out very correctly, right? During COVID, you go into the store and you see these people counters and these screens, you're like, whoa, wow, right? I mean, this has not been here before. And that's it. So that's weird. So we're right now looking quite intensively on what role we can play in sort of helping retailers adopt more AI, and sort of also helping providers of, you know, deep learning applications and AI providers for retail getting into these stores. Right, this can be very painful, and I think losing a lot of teams on that journey.
Yeah, nice. And you know what? That even takes me to where I was actually going to go to next. Anyway, in relation to the future of your business, I mean, you guys are in it's a small space, AI and computer vision retail, but it's extremely competitive. You have Advertima, you have Amazon Go. There's a lot of companies that will try to take your market share. How do you look to keep your market share of what you have, and then even maybe, you know, look to take on even more? How are you going to better partner or provide better solutions to current customers or potential future customers?
Yeah, a good one. No, I agree. I'm not so concerned that Amazon Go is taking our market share. So the thing is, the way I like to put it is you have sort of one cohort of companies, right, or corporates that say, look, we need to rethink the entire store. Can't leave it like that, right? Checkouts need to go away. You need camera every square meter. We need autonomous checkout, period, right? You know, Amazon Go is the first one. You have AI-Fi, you have Trigo, you have Standard, right? All sort of, I don't know, 8-9-figure funded, and very good talent. So I watch this with interest, but it's not our business, right? So we're not building autonomous stores, at least not right now, and probably not in the foreseeable future, because the business models don't check out at the moment. It'll be a while before they do. You know, you can see this, for example, you know, if somebody's good at sort of scaling stuff, it's sort of Amazon, right? And they, correct me if I'm wrong, right? I think 2016, 2017, they started out with the first store. I've seen one in 2018, worked flawlessly in California. And they said that they sort of, I don't know, at least by now they'd have scaled to at least 3,000 stores. Again, rough estimate, not sure about the correct number, but I think they have around 30, 40, maybe something like that. So there's a reason to that, right? I mean, we're seeing a lot of pilot projects in that space, and they're cool. Like, don't get me wrong, I really like this, and I would appreciate it if there were more of them. You know, imagine at the airport, maybe you can check in via Face ID, you grab your Coke, you go to the gate, it takes 30 seconds, perfect. You know, on the other hand, you know, if I have a big store and I have maybe marginal labor savings, maybe that's not something I'm going to do in the near future. You know, I don't know, right? But sort of our idea is more like we're not going to sort of dictate or assume sort of retail strategy for retailers. We believe that it's sort of their space to do that primarily. So on the other hand, I think there's a lot of stuff that you can already do today in stores, right? To make them better, help the staff, take away some of their functions, focus on the customer more, understand that store as it is, as you could maybe understand an e-commerce website, right? You don't, like, next to having shrink that you don't have in a in an e-commerce setting, you know, you have, like, you don't know sort of which products are ill-positioned. You don't know when you're out of stock. You don't know how long it takes to serve a customer. You don't know how many people sort of would have converted if X, but they don't. So it's just you're missing that entire data layer. And sort of there are some initiatives that helping retailers sort of be more data driven, right? Especially out of sort of BI and looking at using point of sale data, using sort of procurement data and everything like that. So a lot of big tech, big players sort of on that, IBM or Databricks or something like that, which is good. But then sort of we believe that there's this other entire layer out of sort of coming from visual data that can that that covers a lot of stuff in the store where you currently have sort of a dead spot or a blind spot, right? You can't measure it, there's no data on it. And at the same time, we more and more have the capacity to sort of figure this out for every kind of store format in a cost efficient way. You know, we provide some of it, other players in the ecosystem provide other parts of it. So our idea is, we don't need to have built every model that runs in the store or every application that runs in the store. But what we also found for ourselves, this is kind of how we got there, is, how do we actually manage to bring more AI to retail stores at scale, right? Because sort of retail works at scale, so sort of retail providers and solutions should also try and sort of have that concept in mind when designing solutions that will work for retail. So basically, the idea is we're more and more thinking, how can we be the enabler of AI solutions in stores? And sort of obviously, sort of a part of that portfolio that will run might be ours, but maybe over time that percentage will actually decrease rather than increase, and sort of help providers of computer vision solutions actually get into stores at scale, get to that data, and sort of help them overcome this significant hurdle, right? Of it's compliance, it's data protection, it's sort of internal jeopardy in the sales process. It's sort of year-long sales cycle sometimes, and then it's sort of still difficult. And at the same time, it's difficult for retailers to purchase and scale and roll out AI solutions, right? It's not like, have solution Y on camera X, enter your credit cards, $10 a month, there you go. No, it's not like that, right? You will, like, tons of departments work together, you put out hardware, you do audits, you do, like, it's a whole mess. Like, how, and so we're more and more thinking, we started sort of out of self-interest, but now it's more like it helps us, but I think we can also sort of help others, and we can help our customers to sort of speed up the deployment and scaling of AI in retail, because sort of we believe it's about time.
Yeah. And I've got two questions. I'm going to try and take them the best way I see forward without mixing them up. First one I want to ask about is the customer experience, not the client. So your client is Aldi, Rayway, Tesco, big supermarket chains. Their experience is you're helping them save money, you're helping them have less theft, have better services. Do you or are you going to look to work with them or look to target yourselves on how the customer, so the shopper, has an experience?
Yeah. So I think so
hard to quantify, I know. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I'll try.
It's not going to be like the airports where you walk out and there's two smileys and two unhappy faces.
Yeah. No, I think sort of there's a lot of aspects to a positive and successful customer experience, right? And one of them is probably sort of, let's say, waiting time at the end of the customer journey. And so, as I said, sort of getting rid of that by putting 1,000 cameras in the store is sort of not what we'll do tomorrow. Now, on the other hand, there sort of, it's also about, like, can you find what you were looking for? Is the store designed in a way that you would expect? Do you have a lot of people that you can tell they're searching for stuff they don't find? Sort of how long does sort of overall customer journey take? What's sort of average basket size? Sort of how well is your maybe self-checkout or mobile checkout experience? Can we maybe interact with you, the customer, in the store via your app or something like that? Give you recommendations. This is more the kind of stuff that we're thinking about, where you basically have multimodal data coming together to understand what's the current state of the customer journey, how can it get better, how can we serve the customer better in the store, what are they actually looking for that we don't know. Like, you don't know what's going on, right? You don't know what's going wrong, because basically the whole process from the customer walking in to the customer presenting themselves at some point of sale is opaque to you as a retailer. Like, you don't know what's going on. It's hard for you to optimize because you don't even it's hard to know where to start. There's sort of like, you could ask your employees, obviously, but they will not like walk around any shopper and sort of do surveys. I mean, there's this reason.
Is that not illegal?
There's companies that they're built around paying people to walk through stores and figure out if they can find stuff, if sort of signage is up where it's supposed to be, if things are out of stock. You know, it's so expensive that they can only do this on a selected and random and whatever sort of statistical basis. But sort of, you know, the information available is so bad that it merits doing that. So yeah. So this is more the kind of stuff I think we would be looking to help retailers get better at.
I suppose, I know this is quite basic, but would you see an increase in average basket size as a happier customer? Because I know when I'm my window shopping stops being window shopping when I'm in a good mood.
it's hard to tell. It's not one for me to answer, I suppose.
I don't know.
I think
it's not as easy as that, right?
it's not as easy as that. But I think you like, we're not going to track this over basically with sort of, I don't know, something like facial stuff. We don't do any biometrics. But imagine you have a loyalty program with an app or something, which more and more grocers are actually adopting. You could ask people, you know, how happy were you with your last purchase? You know, is your like we changed X and Y in the last, you know, months due to sort of optimizations that we've taken. Do you feel it's better to shop here now? Right. So you could I wouldn't just quantify it with sort of sales went up 10%. No, everything's, the world is better. Right. But sort of, I think it's very apparent for retailers as well as customers, as well as vendors. You know, if we go through a store, you know, there are some things that you can optimize and sort of trying to pinpoint these and trying to help retailers be more data driven. And especially sort of focusing on this one data source that they're not leveraging at all in most cases is sort of the idea.
Okay, nice. The other question I was going to ask, do you have new clients come to you, not understand what your product offering is, and basically ask you to make them an Amazon Go style shop overnight because they know you're a computer vision AI company, you can bring in all these processes that help the store save money, generate more money, and their lack of understanding of what you do, but all the press that Amazon Go got over the last 4 years means that they think, oh yeah, these guys do AI in retail. I'm just gonna have myself a personal store.
Yeah. No, we had that for sure, right? But it's gotten less. Right. So I think sort of retailers are educating themselves quite quickly about the landscape and about the differentiation in the ecosystem and what that actually means for them. So I think a couple of years ago, they were still early in their learning journey and it was sort of hard to tell, as you said, sort of what's what actually. But we see a way more sort of differentiated overview and more differentiated requests by retailers. Which, you know, doesn't mean that everything's perfect. So I think one learning is, you know, you have to talk about the things that you do in the ways that your customers would talk about it, right? I mean, we're talking about sort of AI, of course, and it's very hard to do, and you know, you need a lot of specialists, and a lot of stuff of it is sort of brand new and fancy, and you know, all that's all good and well. As a retailer, I don't have to care about that, right? The only thing I care about it sort of is this: does this yield a benefit for me, or does it not? Like, can I save money? Can I make more money? Can I run a more efficient shop? Can I, you know, increase employee happiness? Can I increase employee efficiency? Can I reduce out of stock? Whatever it is, right? These are the business categories, or some of the business categories that are relevant to you as a retailer. And if you can sort of help optimize one or more of those, then that's great. And I think sort of retailers are willing to chat about that for sure. But they will not, they will sort of not adopt it just because it's fancy. But I think sort of in general, the understanding of what's possible is definitely increased. I think everybody's still sort of having a hard time figuring out what's actually feasible and at what time and what cost. We see some quite some sort of people that are, I'm not going to say burned, but have been disappointed by experiences by vendors that may have overpromised a little bit.
I've heard of so many people promising digital transformation and disguising it as AI.
Or people that actually promised AI, but still just didn't work as well as they thought or whatever. So that's definitely still a thing. So, I mean, so if I think sort of we've gotten to, you know, what's possible, but we're not sort of as a whole perfectly aligned and perfectly clear about what's feasible and at what cost, right? So this is still something that, you know, vendors are figuring out, I think, a lot of the time. And this is something that retailers are figuring out, right? Because I think, you know, if you take a budget and you say, okay, this is sort of the potential of this use case, it can be very big, but in your head, you discount this by a certain factor because sort of the success probability in your head, it's not 100%. And with every failed project, it will sort of decrease. So I think it's very important to be upfront and to be fair about sort of what the capabilities are, how much complexity you're facing, how are you going to mitigate it, what the risks are. Because like it's like within every business relationship, right? If it's clear what you're talking about, it's clear what you're going to do, and if it's clear what the risks are, there's always risks and there's always something will go wrong, but you can fix it. But if you sort of light years apart in what the one person thought it would be that you do and what the other person thinks that it is what you do, then you always sort of sooner or later you will run into trouble.
Yeah. And look, we could go on for hours on this, but I don't want to take up and go over time because obviously, you know, we've got a lot of stuff going on outside of this. But I want to leave on one question that I think a lot of people will have a lot of questions about. How will GDPR impact you, or will it, or how do you work in your domain on real-time surveillance feeds with GDPR in grocery stores, which the store itself is private, but everyone in there has their public faces or whatever it might be. Where does that come in? And I would imagine you face a lot of pushbacks on this with new customers of fear. And yeah, so basically, where do you guys fit in with the fear of GDPR?
Yeah, it's a good one. So I think GDPR adds a good 3 to 6 months to every sales cycle in a way. Not always, but sometimes it does. And this is, I think, primarily due to the fact that so retailers are disproportionately risk affected by GDPR because GDPR fines are measured as a percentage of revenue, right? So as a retailer, if you look at sort of the business model, you will have comparatively loss of revenue in comparison with your bottom line. Right, it's not a high margin business. It's a high throughput business. So up to 4% for a large chain, which may do 10 billion, 50 billion in revenue, is significant.
Lightly,
right?
It could even the big stores. It could end up.
Absolutely, and they know this, right? So they're very careful, and this. It's not a catalyst for innovation in that space. Let me put it like this. Nonetheless, it is obviously possible to do stuff, right? I mean, because like I'm not an opponent of GDPR, right? Because the principles, I believe, are the correct ones. So we try, like as I mentioned earlier, we do not use biometric features. We do not use personally identifying features in what we do with video, right? So in deployment, these will often be live applications running on live video, as it would be, for example, if you have a live camera running and there's a detective in the back that's looking at the feed. You know, a lot of the times, most of that data that is processed is actually irrelevant. It just be tossed. Maybe relevant snippets will be stored for slightly longer to be reviewed by a human. So there's a lot, you see this by the fact that there are cameras actually in stores, that there are ways to sort of do video in store in a GDPR compliant way. So it's definitely sort of possible, and we've shown that it's possible. So we've worked with many regulators and we've been through many GDPR audits, and I'm not going to say it's always been fun only, but it's something that you obviously have to do, right? Because you have that regulation, and you don't only have that regulation in Europe. There's sort of more and more companies, like in California, we have an act, in other states, you have an act. A lot of companies, they follow GDPR, although they might not primarily do business in Europe, right? It's just becoming the de facto standard for data protection. I mean, there's other countries I've recently talked to somebody who's, I think, in Saudi Arabia. And as you can imagine, it's basically GDPR turned on its head. So you have like minimum storage timelines instead of maximum storage timelines, everything like that. So it is possible that there'll be some innovation coming from there. I mean, you see there's also a lot of innovation in that space coming from Israel. It's also sort of different. There's different regulations on this. But in the end, I think if you want to sell to Europe, want to sell to the United States, you have to find a way to be compliant there, and actually believe that this is absolutely possible with computer vision use cases that are relevant for retailers.
Look, I appreciate that, and I thank you as well for your time, Philip. It's been great insight into what Signatrix are doing in the industry, and I suppose a lot of people who may not know where their shopping experience is being enhanced without even knowing with computer vision. So that's exactly what we're all about here. So for everyone listening, this is the Computer Vision in Production podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly. Today's guest was Philip Mueller. Philip, again, look, great to have you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Anthony.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Computer Vision in Production podcast with your host, Anthony Kelly. To make sure you get updates on the latest episodes of the show, make sure you subscribe on your preferred podcast listening app or add me on LinkedIn.